Welcome to the Pata Martins podcast. My name is Céline Terranova. I'm an author and brand new podcaster here to help you in your creative career. This show is all about advice, support, and inspiration for performers, writers, musicians, and any kind of artist. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Part-Time Artist Podcast, episode 2. Oh my God, that's amazing. Thank you so much for listening to the first episode. I am amazed at the good feedback that I got from everyone. And I know that my guest, Joseph, was also really happy with the nice comments that we got. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you for coming back, or, you know, welcome if it's the first time that you're listening to the podcast. Today, my guest is Lauren Shields. She's a singer and she's very experienced with juggling with her day job and all the things that she does as a singer. It's amazing. You'd think that she has a time turner for some reason because she's so good with organizing her time. But before, let's talk about the latest news for the part-time artist. You might have seen from my social media platforms that I have recently made a survey for all artists, for you guys, to tell me exactly what are your challenges, what are the things that you need, and what kind of content would be interesting to you. It's still open, so if you can spare 5 minutes, I would really, really appreciate if you take the time to go and fill up the survey. It's not very long, and it would be really helpful for me. The link will be in the show notes, so please head there if you're interested. Otherwise, on the website, I continue to blog. I post a new blog post every Tuesday and Friday, and usually I alternate between written content. The last one was an article about how to motivate yourself if you're feeling lazy, and I also talk about the podcast, I talk about the videos and things like that. So check the website, it's on the part-time artist. Now, recently I have started a YouTube channel. I don't have that many videos there at the moment. I'm still trying to find a way to do it and, you know, to look like a professional YouTuber. I don't know if I have really succeeded yet, but I'm having a lot of fun doing that. And the last video that was published on the channel was about my book, The Part-Time Artist, and I talk about the content of the book and why you should buy it, basically. So if you want to have a look at the channel, the link will be in the show notes too. And then finally, I have just created a Facebook group. I'm super excited about it because it's a Facebook group for all artists who want to turn their art into a business. So it's called the Artist Entrepreneur Community. And I think it's going to be really interesting to have people discussing, giving each other tips and support, because it's really not easy to become an entrepreneur. So I hope it's going to be helpful. It's going to be on Facebook. facebook.com/groups/thepartimeartist, but again, the link will be in the show notes. And one last thing, I am now on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and you can leave a review on these apps. So if you're enjoying the show, please leave a review so that other people can find it. Thank you. The Part-Time Artist Podcast is not brought to you by a super fancy sponsor. Because it's only episode 2, so that's going to take a little bit more time to get sponsors. But the podcast can be brought to you by you if you sponsor me on Patreon. Patreon is a platform that supports artists, and it works a little bit like a crowdfunding site where you have different tiers that you can contribute to. My sponsorships start with $2, and for that you can get bonuses, which are basically more content, more episodes, more videos, more articles. So if you want more details, head to my Patreon page. It's patreon.com/thepartimeartist, patreon.com/thepartimeartist. So today I am with Lauren Shields. She is a singer. She's also a fantastic person, and I'm so excited to have you here with me.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm really excited. It's my first ever podcast.
Is it your first podcast?
It is.
Oh my God, this is such a honor, guys. Okay, perfect. Well, if you want to maybe introduce yourself for the listeners so they can know who you are and what you do.
Cool. So, as you now know, I'm Lauren. Mm-hmm. I'm a singer, have been for the last sort of 10 years-ish, mostly in cabaret, musical theatre and concerts, and have also had a muggle job the entire time. So I've always been what I like to call a multi-hyphenate career person, where, you know, I do many things and have a bit of a patchwork career.
Mm-hmm. I love the term muggle job. I think I'm going to steal it. I'm really sorry. It's considered stolen because it's amazing.
I thought you'd appreciate it. Yeah.
And what kind of muggle jobs have you been doing all this time?
So I've always worked in theatre, which for me has been really important that even when I'm not performing, I'm kind of still feeling that I'm contributing to it, or, you know, I don't stray too far. So I've been box office, front of house, currently work as a theatre administrator, so behind the scenes doing all of the office prep for the show to go on in the evening.
Mm. Well, that's very interesting, and that's how we've met,
because
we've worked together in the theatre. And actually, guys, if you go to a theatre and you meet people working there, a lot of them are artists, and this is their muggle job. Oh my God, I love this term. So now you've been a singer for quite a long time. Have your goals changed since you started being a singer?
Totally. They've definitely evolved. I think the ultimate kind of dream goal of still, you know, being on the West End in a leading role is absolutely still there. But I've learned so much in that 10 years of, you know, I didn't know how many options there were about cabaret and concert work and session singing. And, you know, there are so many different paths that you can take that also aren't fixed. You don't have to do just one thing. So much of being a performer is, you know, your versatility and different kind of, whether you do gigs or choirs or what we call book musicals, you know. So yeah, I've definitely focused more on cabaret and concerts over the last few years. That's just where life has taken me. And it's also really easy to juggle with a muggle job. So that's a really good plus. But yeah, it's definitely, I think it's that thing of the dream hasn't changed, but the specific goals have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think a lot of people who want to do singing or musical theatre, these kind of things, they see one path, which is drama school, to do that. But there's actually a lot of different options that you might not know when you are, I don't know, 16, 17. I don't know when you decide to do that.
Totally, yeah. So I auditioned for drama school for the first time. I was 17. So I would have gone when I was 18. Mm-hmm. It was that sort of academic year. And I actually auditioned for, I think, 8 years in the end, and it just never worked out. So, yeah. And it, you know, you learn a lot about yourself in that process, and you learn about the industry. I'm not particularly a dancer. I've worked on it a lot. I really enjoy it now. But it was never my strong point, to the point where I could do a show that would require that of me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also, you know, it's learning to play to your strengths.
Yeah.
Over that time, and that makes the goals evolve as well.
Oh, that's, and I think when it comes to drama school, you have maybe one certain type of performers who will fit there very well, but then you will have people who have different, as you say, different kind of strength, who might actually feel like they are molded into a mold that is not really them, and it might just be the wrong option for them. So that's good to know. I think if we have performers listening to the podcast and who might maybe think, oh, do I go to drama school? Do I not go? That's a good story to say, oh, you don't have to. And you can still have a really great career without having to go to drama school.
Definitely. And I mean, never say never. I'd still love to go at some point, because I think to invest that intense a period of time in training and, you know, literally live, eat, sleep and breathe it for 3 years or a year if you're doing a master's, would be super beneficial. And I absolutely wouldn't knock it. But I certainly haven't had any doors closed to me by not doing it either. So yeah, it's absolutely open to.
Yeah, that's very good to know. That's definitely very good to know. Now, what does a day of your life look like? Because I know that you do so much between your job and all your artistic commitments. How does it look like for you?
So obviously my muggle job dictates quite a lot of my time. I try to never use my commute for work. That's my one sort of rule, just for my own like mental well-being, and to, you know, to not arrive at work stressed and be able to still give that job my full attention.
Mm-hmm.
For me, that means I don't work as a singer admin-wise or planning or anything on my way into work. It's just too much. So what I do like to do on the way to work is knit.
Yes, because you are a fantastic knitter. Guys, you need to check out her Instagram. It's super impressive.
So yeah, that it just gives me a bit of headspace. Mm-hmm. So basically, every day starts with a bit of knitting on the train. Then whatever my day is at my day job, so it's either sort of 10 till 5, 10 till 6, or if I'm lucky, I have a half day, and then I can go on to rehearsals, singing lessons, and all that, you know, dance class, everything afterwards. I do my singing admin and rehearsals and planning cabarets. All of that happens in the evenings, usually, and on Sundays mm-hmm. is my kind of prime day for that. I would love to find another way around it, because I think it's quite demanding on screen time. Obviously, I have an office job, so mm-hmm. I do then kind of regret having to go home and sit in front of my laptop sometimes for a few hours.
Yeah, because it's like basically what you've been doing for the whole day, and then you have to come home and do the same. Yes,
definitely. But it is just kind of remind yourself that it's all part of the process mm-hmm. and it's all towards a good goal, you know. I do generally try, and it's really hard, especially as a performer, to sort of balance social media. It is something you feel a bit of a responsibility to mm-hmm. engage with. So I try and use my drafts as much as possible. And I do that for emails as well. If I'm planning things or, you know, trying to get in touch with producers and venues, I draft everything in the evenings and then send it out first thing in the morning before I leave for work.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't count that as part of my working day, because it's literally 3 minutes on my iPad of a morning to just press send or publish or whatever before I leave. So yeah, that's my sort of process for making initial contact with people. And I'll then, you know, use my lunch break or whatever to kind of keep on top of that and reply.
Mm-hmm.
But the initial work input of sending out, you know, email mailing lists and tweets and all that happens.
Everything in the evening.
Basically overnight, yeah.
Wow. And I know that you do quite a lot, especially if you have a show coming. You have a lot of work to get done in not a lot of time. Now, how do you manage to fit everything in? Because I swear sometimes I hear everything that you do in one day and I just feel really guilty because I don't do of the things. So how do you manage to get everything fit in your week when you are so busy with your job already and all the stuff that you do?
I honestly don't know. I think it's I definitely don't have a time turner. I really don't. I promise you.
I swear you have one. That's not possible, really don't. Otherwise.
I think a lot of the time, because I mostly now am doing sort of gigs or specific, you know, short runs of a cabaret or a day in the recording studio or whatever, it's sort of project based.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that if I've got a busy week, then obviously things on the sort of social life, hobbies and things like that just get a bit quieter. But I know that's for quite a limited time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just the compromise of things. And, you know, if I need to give up knitting on the train for a day, I will. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just being, I think, just giving myself a bit of a free pass sometimes to kind mm-hmm. of go, okay, for 1 week, yes, I'm going to be tired. Yes, I'm going to have probably worked, you know, 14, 16 hour days by mm-hmm. the time I get home, rehearse, go to a recording session or go to, you know, a venue to meet the management or whatever. But it is just kind of going, okay, well, that's fine, because once the show's done, then there'll be, you know, a few days of follow-up and thank yous and admin of the invoices and all that sort of thing. But then actually I've got a break
mm-hmm.
before another one. So it's just the compromise of giving time to it when it's busy and relaxing when it's not.
Do you manage to relax?
Totally, yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. I do. That's one of my problems, is that when there's nothing, I'm starting to stress because there's nothing.
Yeah, I think it's just making sure that you are always doing something to work towards the goal,
mm-hmm.
especially for someone in my position and yours. Like, we're sort of on the entrepreneur side as well. You know, I produce a lot of the shows that I mm-hmm. perform in, so you do kind of always just have to be a little bit on the front foot about it, you know, and have something going that's proactive. But that doesn't mean you have to spend, you know, 15 hours a week in singing lessons, because that's not practical. But it's just sort of looking out for venues, looking out, you know, I'm always listening to new musicals and see mm-hmm. so it's just constantly looking out for things that could help us or we could use in shows, or, you know, training opportunities, networking opportunities, all that sort of thing. But a lot of that is keeping in touch with the industry, seeing, mm-hmm. going to the theatre, seeing friend shows, you know, keeping in touch
Yeah, so on top of everything, going to these events so that you meet people.
Yeah, and equally that plays into social life and relaxing for me. So that's part of, you know, if I go to the theatre with my friends, it's kind of a bonus thing that sometimes it'll help me in sort of my performing life as well.
Well, that's great. I mean, it's great that you managed to also kind of make a difference between this is work, but this is also fun.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it's got to be fun, otherwise we wouldn't do it. You know,
definitely.
We're all driven by the love of doing it, I think, aren't we? But it's...
Absolutely. Now, if we can come back a little bit to the way you organize your time, because I think you have a way that is very visual, and I talked about it a little bit in the book, because yes, Lauren is one of the contributors to the book, and I think people will find it very interesting, and I certainly did find it really interesting because I'm a very visual person. So if you want to explain a little bit what you do.
Yeah, so I color code my diary quite obsessively. I have 5 different highlighters on the go at the moment. But I try not to put limits of how much. Basically, I split things up. My work day and my social life are just sort of written in ordinary pen. And then anything that is towards my singing, performing, producing, self-employed life goes in pink. Going to the theatre goes in blue, and hobbies go in green. As an example, roughly. And I try not to put actual goals and limits on how many of each thing I have in a week. But doing it helps me see the balance, or see when the balance is out of whack, or, you know, see... Obviously, I can't afford to go to the theatre every week. I mean, not many people in a part-time artistic career can.
It's, of course.
So naturally, there are less of those things. But I also try and keep on top of, you know, if I've spent a few hours working on looking at new venues, or working on a program for a show, or all of that, you know, documenting it and going just for the mindset of thinking, yes, I am working towards something. So it's a tracker, I think, more than a sort of to-do list box checking.
Yeah, so it doesn't worry you if you haven't managed to do something that you had planned to do, for example, on that weekend, and then you didn't have time to do it. It's not worrying you, it's not making you feel guilty?
Not generally. I mean, I think it's, again, just the compromise, sometimes being kind to yourself. Obviously, as a singer as well, my health is kind of in that, so there will be times where I've not been well enough to rehearse or not been well enough to sing. But it's sort of replacing things then and going, okay, well, have I maybe looked at potential new songs or some, you know, have I done something else productive with that time? Equally, if I need a night out with my mates, I'm going to have one. It's not, you know, you have to be kind to yourself like that. So yeah, I try not to put any pressure on how many of sort of each thing, each category of things I can do in a week.
That's great. That's something I need to learn, is that sometimes you just need a day off. And that's okay. And I have started now just planning my days off too, which is a bit weird.
Yeah.
But if you don't plan it, if you don't put it in a certain colour, then you're not going
to
do it.
Exactly. And I think then you'd start to resent
the
work. Yeah. And you never want to do that.
Yeah. Now, you talked earlier about going to the theatre, for example. Not everyone can afford to do it. And you go to the theatre, you do classes, you do shows that sometimes you produce and you have to pay things. Now, does it cost... Well, I'm sure it costs a lot of money, but how do you decide what is worth and what is not worth? Because everyone has a limited amount of money, so how do you decide what you are going to invest in?
Do you know, I've never really considered whether it's worth it. I think, obviously, on a case-by-case basis, there are people and classes and things that I willingly put my money and faith into. It is expensive, I'm not going to lie. I've, you know, over the sort of decade that I've been really pursuing it professionally, I dread to think how much money we're talking, really.
Yeah.
But it's sort of, for me, it's knowing that it's A, investing in myself, and B, the return won't always be monetary. So, you know, yes, I've paid a lot of money for singing lessons over the time, but that has been so tied to my sense of fulfillment and my happiness over that time.
Yeah.
That, you know, there's, and my personal development, I mean, I've met amazing people, I've made amazing friends, I've worked with people that, you know, have been original cast members in West End shows, and so it's all part of a reward. You know, it's not like maybe a financial investment in the sort of classic city sense, where if you invest in a company you expect a percentage and a return, because that's not how it works for us. You know, there's fulfillment to consider as well. But yeah, it is, it's hard sometimes to know what to buy. It's, over the years, honestly, it's been trial and error of kind of what classes suit me, what sort of training suits me. And I've fallen into, and really glad I have, having a sort of patchwork training background of having lots of different singing teachers, lots of different dance teachers. And that came from not going to drama school, that, you know, because I didn't have that set time with a certain amount of people. But I also think that's given me very much the mindset of never stop learning. So I don't ever think that I don't need to go to a singing lesson. And that's not to say that people who've been at drama school do, but obviously you have a fixed period of training then. Whereas mine's kind of always ongoing.
Yeah, but I love that, because I think a lot of artists need to hear that. Never stop learning. That's the best advice I think you can have, because in any discipline, whether you're a writer, whether you're a singer, whether you're a photographer, filmmaker, you need to keep yourself updated with what's going on. And in your case, you need to keep training your instrument, which is your voice.
Is never done.
No.
You know, keeping your voice healthy, keeping it developing, that's never over. That's, you know, I don't think there is a point where you go, yes, my voice is now fully trained. Because there are always, you know, always new things to keep on top of. And
I assume there's also new trends, new stuff in musicals or in
definitely, cabaret. Especially in theatre, actually, because there's, you know, obviously you go through waves of having sort of, at the moment, very different musically shows, things like Hamilton and Come From Away that aren't in the sort of traditional show tune category. But then equally, a few years ago, we were going through all the pop shows. So it is, there's often vocal trends and vocal styles that you need to keep up with. And
And what about when you do a show and maybe you're not paid, which is the thing for a lot of artists? How do you decide if it's worth it, this one?
It's totally on a case-by-case basis, to be honest. A lot of the work I've done and produced myself, I've done on a profit share basis.
Can you explain what is that profit share basis?
Yeah, so basically it's, I only make money if the show does.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So as long as all the costs are met, that's sort of fine with me, largely for those, you know, shows that I do with myself or with the duo. That's the basis we work on. Generally, I try not to work for free being employed by other people as a singer, because I think it perpetuates the problem of artists working for free. But obviously there are things, charity things, and or sometimes you'd be given an opportunity to work with someone that you know you can really learn something from, or you know that there's further opportunities with, you know, or you're going to play an amazing venue that you never dreamed you would. So it's, again, it's just about thinking what that return is on your investment of time into a project. Is kind of, is it fulfilling in financially, artistically, personally, you know?
Yeah. But it's not just the money side of it. It's really everything that it's going to bring to you that needs to be put in the balance of, am I going to do this or not?
Yeah. And on the flip side of that, we all need to pay the bills. And I think
that
is a huge benefit of being a part-time artist, is that, you know, I'm very lucky in my current job that does cover my basic bills and costs. So singing essentially pays for more singing. So obviously I'd love that to be a bigger portion of my income, but it does mean that I have a little bit of leeway in going, okay, actually, I'm really excited about, you know, this new musical, so I do have a bit of time to give to it. Whereas if I was relying on my singing for my rent, I wouldn't necessarily be in that position. And I think being an artist would be so much more stressful. I have massive respect for people who do that, you know.
And do you think sometimes about, well, since we talk about money, landmarks that other people might have, so things like buying a house, so getting a mortgage, retiring at some point. Do you think about it, and does it scare you that maybe it might be more difficult?
I think it's a reality that we accept when we're as creatives. I think it's, you know, it's a general thing, and it's not to sort of buy into the starving artist stereotype, because that doesn't have to be the case by any means. But it is sort of, that is an area where comparison can really creep in, especially, I'm Welsh, if you can't sort of tell that from my accent, but,
beautiful,
you know, a lot of friends back home have sort of settled down and got married and had children and own houses or, you know, have a mortgage at this point. And I absolutely have none of that. So it's very easy for comparison to creep in there, but I don't particularly feel scared of it where I am now. I think, you know, I'm single, I don't have children, so I don't have the kind of pressure to own a property at this point. Who knows in the current climate what's going to happen?
Mm-hmm, so absolutely.
I think in some ways the flexibility is probably a benefit as well. You know, I don't really see myself ever fully retiring either. I think that's probably quite true of most creatives, that mm-hmm. whilst you obviously may spend less time working as you get older, when it's sort of artistically fulfilling, I can't see myself ever wanting to give that up either.
Same for me.
So as long as my voice holds out, I mean.
Yeah, because obviously there will be this, and I'm sure if we have dancers, for example, listening, they might think that, yes, at some point they won't be able to do everything that they're doing right now.
Yeah.
But when we think about retirement, we think usually about retirement from a normal job.
Yeah.
Quotation marks. But not really about artistic retirement, which I don't think really exists.
Yeah. And I think that all ties in with sort of goals evolving and changing over time as well, especially for dancers, as you said, like that's quite a, you know, they often have a fixed sort of point where they need to retire from appearing professionally as a, you know, prima ballerina, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are so many other avenues. You see so many dancers who are choreographers then later on, or
very true.
Designers or teachers, you know, there are lots of ways that you can still fulfill that.
Very, very, very true. Now, I have a new segment in the podcast. I have titled it for now, Twitter Ask, because I have got some questions actually from the listeners of the podcast. I've asked a few days ago because I said, I have an amazing singer coming. what do you want to ask? So I have a few questions. The first one from K.H. Zimmer. I think he's from Germany.
Oh, hello in Germany. How exciting.
So he is asking, if you could sing as part of a movie soundtrack, what would be your favourite movie you'd like to sing and why?
Oh, wow. I think for 7-year-old me, I have to say Anastasia and Journey to the Past, because that was, yeah, I grew up with that film. Mm-hmm. So that probably has something to do with why I do what I do.
Yeah.
I love a lot of film soundtracks, actually. There are some mm-hmm. great music in terms of sort of pop songs as well, and jazz soundtracks and things like that. I love the soundtrack to Sleepless in Seattle. There are some great jazz tracks on there. But yeah, I think I'd have to say Anastasia.
Uh-huh. Do you include sometimes films in your gig? Film?
Definitely, yeah. We actually did a whole, we called it the Diva List at the movie. So I'm one half of a cabaret duo called the Diva List.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very much a celebration of all the sort of old MGM musicals.
Oh, amazing.
And film soundtracks in there. So that was great fun. But I'd love to do more.
Yeah, oh my God, I would love to listen to more. Okay, I have another question from Alex on Twitter, asking, how do you memorize lyrics and what inspired you to sing?
Oh, wow. Let's go for lyrics. That's the easy part of the question. My top tip for memorizing lyrics is to write them out by hand, which is really old-fashioned.
In
this day and age, because it's so easy for us to go to Google and print off a copy of the lyrics. But I think there's something that makes it settle in my head that sort of comes from me writing it out by hand.
Uh-huh.
And also in a theatrical sense, I feel like that really helps me with the acting through song, because it's as if I've written it as some sort of, you know, journal entry, or I think there's something about writing it personally that makes it stick and makes you connect.
You know, when I was at university, I would write everything by hand because that's the only way I could remember things. So there's something in that, like your brain understands it because it does the gesture.
Yeah, there's some sort of processing thing
that
helps with that, I think.
And what inspired you to sing?
I always did. I don't know if there was ever a moment where I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to sing next.
So you were a child singing already?
Yeah, and I didn't perform as a child as such. I mean, I, you know, I performed in my living room in my mum's high heel shoes, like lots of sort of young aspiring performers did. But yeah,
if you have done that, please, please, please send me pictures.
Oh, please, yes. Don't let me be alone in that, folks. Yeah, I think, you know, I grew up, the musicals and kind of old movies were big in my house growing up. Mm-hmm. So I watched a lot of Judy Garland and Gene Kelly movies. And yeah, it was always there. And I think being Welsh means it's always there as well. You know, they're known as the land of song. It's a very musical
really?
Country. Yeah, uh-huh. So I think it was just always there.
Mm-hmm.
I think the point where I decided to do it, so really pursue it professionally, I guess I was in high school when it sort of became clear to me that you could do it as mm-hmm. a real job, because I think it's only sort of our generation that are quite clear about the fact that you can pursue creative careers. I think
That's
it was a bit mystical to people before that. So yeah, I think high school was when it started to become clear. I had a great performing arts teacher who encouraged me, and I think that was the start of it.
A good teacher sometimes makes a difference,
completely
a difference. And as a reverse, a bad teacher can also make you completely give up something. And when I was in high school, I had a teacher who basically bashed everything I wrote. And I stopped writing for several months because of that. So a good teacher, if you're a teacher out there and you have some of your students who are just express interest in being an artist, please encourage them, please
yeah,
help them.
It's
because
so
it's
important.
So important. Yeah, because you might not have the support at home, and sometimes the teacher is the only support you have. So, yeah, very
yeah.
important.
I mean, I'm very lucky my family are really supportive of me sort of pursuing a creative
mm-hmm.
career. But equally, none of them are in theatre or musicians or,
mm-hmm.
you know, so whilst the support's there, they didn't have the knowledge to help me, you know.
Yeah.
It was because it was just a world that they didn't understand, and neither did I at 15, 16, you know. So, yeah, it took a great teacher. And the two biggest things, my creative career and my biggest hobby, funnily enough, my two favourite teachers at school were performing arts and textiles. So it definitely has a lasting effect.
Yeah, it's all your life, basically,
yeah.
because of two people. That's incredible. Now I have the last question from Twitter, which is a fun question, so I think you're going to enjoy. How do you do the metal growl?
What?
As a singer, how would you do that?
Oh,
you know,
I see.
I'm really interested because I listen to metal music. So, you know, if I could learn how to do that, that would be awesome.
Do you know what I wouldn't like to say, because I'm not a voice teacher
mm-hmm.
and it's not my genre,
mm-hmm.
but I can hook you up with the best people who know this.
Okay.
Heavy metal singers who teach. So feel free to get in touch with me and I will help you out. But
okay, guys, I think I'm going to have to do that. And then I'm going to just open one of the podcast episodes being like, wah!
I think people's voices, you know, you have to be able to sing safely is such
yeah,
a huge,
it's so damaging,
a huge thing. It can be if you do it incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously there is a safe way to do it,
mm-hmm.
but it's not my area of expertise. And I wouldn't want to give anyone any vocal problems by suggesting.
Well, it was a question from Wilbur, and I think he's going to enjoy the reply.
Sorry.
Anyway.
Sorry, Wilbur.
Now, my final question, if you have one piece of advice, one like bite size, kind of advice for someone who's maybe thinking about going into your avenue, maybe someone who doesn't know if they want to go to drama school or just they want to become a singer, what is your biggest advice?
I think as someone who's maybe just starting out, ask someone you admire, you know, within reason, obviously. I'm not suggesting that we all start tweeting Hollywood stars for advice.
Lady Gaga, how do I become...
yeah.
But Lady Gaga, if you're listening to this, I would love to have you on a podcast.
I would love to talk to you too about, you know, old Hollywood, and we'd get along great, I'm sure. Yeah, I think there's, you know, I've been very lucky, and it takes a bit of vulnerability and bravery to kind of go, I really admire your career, can you give me some advice? And it's, I mean, literally ask someone out for coffee, buy the coffee, treat them to a coffee. But yeah, that's been really helpful of just, mm-hmm. you know, I've been really lucky, but people are in the arts very generous with their time and their experience. And you know, it sometimes takes someone that doesn't know you personally as well, I think, to really give you a clear set of goals and mm-hmm. things that you can achieve. So I think a little bit of, you know, someone who's a professional acquaintance as opposed to your best friend is in a great position to give you advice.
That's awesome. That's a good, very, very good advice. Just ask Thanks. Someone. Just and ask, now yeah. with social media, it's so easy to reach out to someone.
Exactly.
And I have seen people doing that for writers, for example. Yeah. Because writers are really great to talk about, you know, to talk to on social media. And you can just ask them.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you can't see them because they're not in the same city as you, you can always have a call, a chat. It's
definitely
easy.
And equally, social media, like you said, is such a great way.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, people are so much more accessible mm-hmm. if you are really just starting out and perhaps haven't had singing lessons yet, or, you know, not sure where to find training and all that kind of thing. Social media is a great way. You know, you can look at performers you admire and see who they're working with.
Mm-hmm.
You can find lots of voice teachers through social media, and it is a great way to just kind of go, hi, I'd like to work with you. How, you know, how do we make this happen, and see if anything sort of snowballs from it. My other best piece of advice is to know that it's okay to have a hobby. Because I think when you're a creative, I certainly went through a time of being told that unless it was your absolute life and you, you know, live, eat, sleep and breathe your creative career, then you won't be successful. And I actually think the opposite is true, that it's really healthy to have a hobby as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that for me, you know, especially as a singer auditioning and that kind of thing, a lot of the time success is based on somebody else's view of what you do. Whereas if you have a hobby, you know, you like to paint
figurines. If you follow
figures,
me on Instagram, you'll see them.
And I love to knit and stitch and crochet and all that kind of thing. And I think for both of us, what's so satisfying about that is that we get to judge if we've been successful mm-hmm. at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's really nice, particularly as a performer, where there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of processes of kind of judgment and gatekeepers really to your success, then you can take that away by having a hobby. And I think that's really, really healthy.
That's super good advice, because a lot of people, especially if you have a job on the side, you kind of treat your art as a hobby, but actually it's not really a hobby.
Yeah.
If you're trying to get somewhere, to have goals, and you can have rejections and you can have some negativity linked to it sometimes, do something that just makes you happy.
Yeah.
That has absolutely no purpose other than just having fun.
And equally, I think, you know, you have to keep a little bit of your creative career for yourself as mm-hmm. well. You know, I definitely go home and sing songs that I will never perform sometimes mm-hmm. because that just needs to happen on a hobby.
The pressure a bit.
Yeah, exactly. And like in the same way that, you know, we've talked about you writing fan fiction so many times.
Yes.
And you still have the urge to do that. But
oh
that's
my God,
kind of
yes.
that's your own creative fulfillment, and that's not linked to your creative business. And I think having a hobby is a really important thing. So it is okay to have a hobby.
Perfect advice. I think that's a great advice. Now, where can people find you online and offline?
You can find me in usual places: Twitter, Insta, SoundCloud. I'm at Miss L Shields, initial L.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in London, so yeah.
Do you have any projects coming on soon?
I do, but none that I can tell you about.
Oh, big secret.
I know, I have some exciting things in the works, but hopefully announcements coming out in the next sort of few weeks.
Yeah, so they should really follow you on social media so they can have the update.
Yes, please, do
when
follow
it
me
comes.
On Twitter.
I know some of it, but I can't tell you guys, and I know it's going to be awesome. I cannot wait. I've seen pictures and everything, so yes, it's going to be awesome. All right, well, thank you so much for coming
here. You're welcome.
Here.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you guys for listening, and I hope you'll be with us on the next episode. Thank you for listening to the Partum Artist podcast. If you want more advice and inspiration, head to the website thepartumartistinoneword.com, and don't forget to subscribe and leave a review if you enjoyed the show.